This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Pure Pleasure with Dewey Halpas on Adobe Radio. I am Dewey, your host with the most, bringing you new content every week right here on Adobe Radio, and again on iTunes and everywhere else podcasts are available once this show airs. So we are greatly, greatly appreciative to be on Adobe Radio, and we are moving nights, as you're hearing right now on Saturday night. Saturday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern, that's 3 p.m. Pacific. Right here on Adobe Radio, you can hear the first run of this show, which then becomes the Pure Pleasure Podcast after that on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are available. We are now on Google Play. We are also on iTunes, like I said. We are on SoundCloud, pretty much, I mean, Stitcher, anywhere. If you can find a podcast there, you'll find us there. And you can always check out the website on Adobe. If you go to adobe.com/shows/purepleasure, you can listen to all of my episodes on there as well, if you like to hang out on that site. There's some great music on there as well, so I definitely recommend checking it out at least, if you get a chance. So all my episodes are up on iTunes, all my episodes are up on SoundCloud, so full access everywhere, and the show is free. And to keep it free, we do appreciate you know, any donations that come through on the Donate tab on the website, purepleasurepodcast.com. We also have the Amazon affiliate link. And that affiliate link, anything you buy using that link, if you bookmark it, anything you buy on Amazon, whether it's a box of cereal or a bike, anything, we get 4% of. It doesn't cost you any extra, but it definitely supports the show and keeps us going, keeping the show free, keeping the lights on. That'd be really great to get some action on there like we have been. And we do definitely appreciate having that coming through every week and seeing that. But my guest today is Jay Sikong from the band Owl. Now, Jay and I have not spoken before this interview, so this was definitely interesting because up to this point, I've done a lot of friends that I've had long relationships with on off the road, a lot of inside jokes and funny tour stories and everything else. So I was excited to talk to Jay because I've been a fan of the band Owl for a long time and was really excited when I talked to Natalie about getting them on the show. But I was also excited to talk to someone who I've never talked to before, that I like their stuff and wanted to put it out there. And I know they're doing well, but I wanted to do my part and get their name out there. So Jay and I finally connected over Skype and had a great conversation. We talked a lot about, you know, the typical things, like, you know, about writing the record, found out that he writes a lot of the music, pretty much all of it himself, and then writes the parts for everyone else. And they all come together as one cohesive unit, which was also pretty cool to learn. The music's really dreamy and atmospheric and really beautiful. And I think everyone's really going to enjoy hearing that. Now, and we also got into some fun stuff. I found out Jay, does commercial work for, big companies where he can play around with music that, as a musician, you, in a certain kind of music, you don't necessarily want to play, but you like to mess around with. Like, there's always been a time a metal dude has come in to practice space and there's a keyboard and he starts playing some dance beats or something just to be funny. Jay gets to do that for a living as well on the side from Owl. So that's also fun to know. So I wanted to get into that with him a bit, which we did. So I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. And I really appreciate you guys listening week to week. PurePleasurePodcast.com is the website. We are also available on Adobe's website under the live shows section. And we are on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter is at @PodPeerPleasure and Instagram is at @PeerPleasurePod. So definitely hit us up on there. PeerPleasurePod@gmail.com is the email if you want to send me comments, or questions or guest ideas or just tell me to fuck off. Like, it, either way, I mean, it's awesome getting mail from you guys and hearing your thoughts on the show. So without further ado, let's get into the episode with Jay Sikong from Ole. How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm so sorry.
Dude, no problem at all, man. It's just how it works sometimes. It's a nonstop hustle because it's trying to get two people together at the same time is hard enough, especially on different coasts and everything else. But I'm stoked to have you on the show, man.
Dude, what kind of microphone are you using? You sound like James Earl Jones with that bass.
Oh, thank you. It's a Blue Yeti.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, man, and I'm getting over being sick as well, so my voice is about an octave lower than it usually is.
Oh, yeah, you got that Macy Grayness to it.
Oh, yeah.
I also have a bit of grogginess. We'll both sound like 50-year-old men on this interview.
Excellent, man. And so you guys, the band is Ole, and is it Sikong?
Yep.
Okay, so Jay Sikong from Ole on Equal Vision Records with me today on the Pure Pleasure Podcast. You guys are over in New Jersey, right?
Yeah. Okay. Our violinist, although from Jersey, lives in Brooklyn now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Wanted to pay a little more for rent.
Yeah, right, I guess.
Well, awesome. So I wanted to know a little bit about you to get started. You know, I'm a fan of the band, but I know not a whole lot about you. So, where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Central Jersey, like Woodbridge area, Middlesex County, like suburban Jersey. Uh-huh. And yeah, actually, most of us did. Well, the three out of five of us did, but yeah. Suburban Jersey, that's me.
Okay, right on. I love New Jersey. The first time we went out there on tour, the one thing I noticed is everyone said awesome instead of awesome, and it was just like in a movie. It was like walking into a movie set. I was like, we're instantly on the East Coast. Like, I think we came from Ohio or something. We did a long stretch where we were away from other people for a long time, and then got out of the van, and there it is.
Yeah, I think. The more I drink, the more my awesome comes out.
Excellent.
Instead of awesome.
Man. So how did you first get started into music? Did you play from an early age, or did you kind of come into it later?
Yeah. Well, like most Korean kids, my parents made me take piano lessons, which I've always loved music, but hated when I was younger. I sort of hated the aspect of being forced to learn piano, but finally they let me quit later on because they just knew how much I hated it. And then I feel like as soon as they let me quit, I like went to the piano and was just like, oh wow, this is a really cool instrument. And so so I actually really am happy that they made me in hindsight.
That's a good foundation instrument for...
It is, yeah. All the notes are just, like, laid out in order. You know, there's, like, the multitasking aspect to it. So if you want to get into drums, which I actually did, I went from piano to drums, and that was, like, sort of my first rock band experience was being a drummer for a while. And, uh-huh. And then after playing drums until I was like, I feel like I was 16 when I sort of really wanted to get into the melodic side of music. And plus it just looks cooler holding a guitar, right?
So, yeah, absolutely.
So I would have my friends just like, whichever friends did play guitar, I would have them teach me like random chords here and there. And I feel like my first music lessons on guitar was just very much like through friends. And we didn't have YouTube back then. Or maybe, I don't think we did. And so a lot of it was just learning through people, just trying to figure it out with my ear. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I always loved drums. And I didn't play drums for a while because I just figured like, I thought it would be like riding a bicycle. Like I won't play drums for a year and then I'll sit behind a kit and it'll be like as natural as breathing. I just couldn't possibly imagine sitting behind a kit and not being completely comfortable. But sure enough, like after a year of just like not touching the drums, I sat behind the kit and like first thing to go was my footwork. Like it was completely, it was horrible. So I think I just let it go at that moment. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting route to take where you just kind of cycled through a bunch of stuff all at once. And, I learned to play by ear as well. And I couldn't read music to save my life. Couldn't do this day. And that's something that I felt. Do you have any abilities that way? As far, I know you taught yourself a lot of things besides piano, but can you read music on other instruments?
So I completely forgot how to read music on piano and all other instruments, and it's kind of it's a big regret of mine because I feel like as cool it is to say that that we can just pick something up by ear or learn something by ear. Whenever I'm like learning a song, I sort of like learn my version of the song. I'll miss little like diminished notes here and there. It'll be like the dumbed down version of whatever I'm trying to learn.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm just picking up by ear usually. And I feel like whenever you learn a song, you kind of like add to your arsenal. I feel like I would have a much bigger arsenal if I was able to just read sheet music and be like, oh wow, this is exactly what they did. And cool. I would never thought to do that. Let me add that to my arsenal.
Yeah. And you guys have some string arrangements too, so you're kind of set up for that, where you don't have to necessarily bring in someone else to do these parts and have transcribed music of your own stuff. You kind of lucked out there, where you already have it within the band. So
So what we do there is like when I write like a string part, I usually record everything on like Logic. And so when I do that, it's all just MIDI, right? It's all just played on a keyboard. And so within Logic, there's a program that transcribes MIDI into notes, on a scale. So I could just send Jane, because Jane does, our violin player, she does know how to read music and she's very comfortable with it and actually prefers to read it. So I'll just send her that sheet music that I have no idea how to write myself, but just like the program turns the MIDI into it for me.
That's crazy. I didn't know that it did that. It's like that Google Translator or whatever. You can type in whatever and what language you want it to go to, and it just pops it over, and you can copy it and text it or something. Or
yeah. Except like those Google Translators, I feel like never quite. we always get like messages from like other like countries or like posts where like when I hit that Google transcribe button, it always turns into a really funny message, and it's like it's almost like cute, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The things that get lost in translation, I don't know. Like one of the messages I remember was like from Japan, and like it translated into like, "Your music is a coming of my heart," or something like that. And it was like beautifully poetic.
It is.
I'm sure this probably doesn't sound as strange, in the way that they're saying it.
That's incredible. You can't make that up either. Like you can't just sit there and come up with that. Even the greatest poet couldn't sit there and do that. All they needed was Google. And
yeah.
I mean, it's prophetic. It's awesome.
That'll be the next like concept record. It'll be like just poorly transcribed lyrics.
Oh, that's fantastic. So tell me a little bit about how OLE got together and how that all started for you guys, as far as coming together and kind of your journey to where you are now.
Yeah. Well, so I was coming from another band that was the first band. It was a band called Delft where I was singing. And so once that sort of fell apart, I was like, all right, let me just get a group of people that I just like, right? Because I knew that the music that I wanted to make, I knew that you didn't have to like shred on your instrument to play it. Sure. It's more about, do you want to play, you know, like a band like Mogwai or like Sigur Rós. Like, it's not that they kill it on their instruments, but they just have the patience and the vision to play it. And so I knew that finding people with similar vision was more important than finding people that were just really prolific with their instruments. So so it kind of makes sense that I ended up being in a band with like my favorite people in the world. It's uh-huh. like the all-star cast of awesome people. But so I knew Ryan from high school, never really talked to him, but in high school, but just like connected with him later on. And Ryan's our drummer, and I met, same thing with Nunzio. He went to my high school, never really talked to him, but we kind of connected later on. And Seamus, I went to this audio, Institute of Audio Research, this like engineering school. And I just like met him on the train. And we would just like talk about music, and it's funny because I asked him to join the band without even hearing him ever play. But like, just the, you know, like sometimes the way people just talk about music, you know that you kind of know that everything's going to be okay. I don't know if that's ever happened to you, where you just can trust that this person will know what they're doing. And Jane, I've known since I was a little kid. We like our families would go to the same church because we both like grew up Catholic, uh-huh. although not Catholic anymore. So Jane, I've known the longest since I was a little kid.
Okay. And you guys just started, So you write the majority of the songs, or all the songs, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how does that work with you guys as far as songwriting? When you were starting out, did you have a group of songs already, or did you kind of just get together and hash out ideas?
So usually it's almost like pre-production where, I'll just record a song on Logic, and then I'll like send out, different mixes to the different band members where their instrument is the loudest so that they could learn their parts. And then just sort of bring it into rehearsal and we'll just play it together. And if there's anything that they want to tweak on their own part, you know, it's usually for the best. So, so it kind of works out that way. It's terribly like unromantic to explain it that way. Like, I'd love to say that, like, we just get in a room and like, bro, like it just happens. Uh-huh. It's magic just happens. But like, but no, it's usually, yeah, because I've been in bands where we just sit in a room and just cycle something a million times over, and then at the end of the day, it's just like trying to polish a turd or something, or you know, trying to make something work just because of how much work you've already put into it, like a bad poker hand. Because for me, I want to make music that I really enjoy listening to, mm-hmm. So if I could just record something, sit back and be like, okay, this is, you know, I like this, or I'm proud of this, then that's something I want to work with.
Okay. So you write everything. So you write all the different parts and then send them out. That's interesting. There's, you know, the two schools of thought on that is, you know, some people look at bands and say, well, you know, that band was amazing because it was those four or five people together. If one of them left, it would not be the same. And then there's the other one that there's one person in the band that has the vision and, you know, the music happens because they're in that room, but it's not necessarily needed. Like if something happened where, you know, someone had a baby and said, I can't do it anymore, you guys could continue and the songs would sound similar to what they do with you guys as a band now versus, do you feel that way? Or do you, since you're coming from that school?
Yeah, I do feel like if one of us was missing, it would sound very different. Maybe not compositionally or structurally, but I mean, you know, just Seamus is a much better guitarist than I am, and he has a certain touch, and it sounds better. And when I'm writing his parts, I'm literally like playing 2 seconds of it and then like readjusting my hand and then playing the next 2 seconds, and then it's like very much like chopped up and it sounds horrible, but it's okay because it's not for anyone to hear. It's just for him to figure out how to make the mad, you know, whatever I did into reality. And so, you know, I couldn't play his parts, you know, and also there's other roles that I feel like are so important with this band besides just the playing aspect, like the personalities and like someone like our bassist Nunzio, you know, he is like the dad of the band, where like he's always just like taking care of everything on like the sort of like business side and always just like level-headed. I do feel like this band would be very different if one of the members was like switched out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And more of a. I see what you're saying, because you know, some people are a little heavier handed, or you know, yeah. just make things sound the way you do. Even if you're writing everything, it still sounds the way it does because of those people individually.
Yeah, and also like where would I find another group of people that would like be so I don't want to say selfless, but like would be willing to just trust me on this, like to be like, all right, like you want to, like most people would not be okay with me like writing you know, the parts for them, or I don't know, I just feel like I really lucked out with this group of people. I don't, you know what I mean, like I don't think I would be in a band where someone else was like writing my parts for me.
Yeah. And I totally understand that, and I've talked about it, I think, before on an earlier episode, but I know Omar from Mars Volta and that whole group. I read that he would write the parts, but he would teach them to the players, but they wouldn't be able to hear the whole group together until it was done. So they played their parts, that's not knowing where it's fitting or why. I mean, they're playing obviously to a click track. But to do it that way, so they get a completely encapsulated performance of their own part, and then they don't hear it till the album's done or the mix is done. I thought that was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're a guy like that, where you know he's such a maniac that I would definitely trust him, right? Like yeah. I would definitely be like, oh, you want me to fart into the pickup? Like, okay, yeah. I'll do it. I bet it's gonna be awesome. But you know, one of the reasons why I record everything on Logic and then send it out is just so I could be like, instead of being like, guys, trust me, this is all going to work out, it's just so I could be like, okay, well, this is what it sounds like altogether. Mm-hmm. If you like it, we could do it. And if not, also, like, you know, if they don't like the songs, then, you know, we don't do them. I mean, that's, you know, for sure. That goes without saying. So they get to hear how it all comes together. And yeah, so I guess there's less of a leap there.
Okay. Yeah, I see that magic moment when they finally get to hear everything done and it all makes sense. This is cool that it's more of a democracy still, you know, with one big vision and then everyone else filling that vision, you know, getting it completed. And that's got to feel good once you hear the record all done and they hear it too and hear all those ideas come together and really make something special.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely it sounds weird, but it is definitely a democracy. I mean, if it ever got to a point where, you know, someone wanted to do something other than, I mean, everything comes down to a vote, really. Mm-hmm. I'm just really lucky where we've just sort of been in agreement with most things.
Yeah. And how did you guys get hooked up with EVR?
I think just like different people have been hitting up EVR about us. Like, I'm really good friends with this producer, Will Putney. And I know he's friends with Dan from EVR. So he's been hitting them up. We have a friend Dan Moder, like just different people have been hitting them up throughout the years. So finally, they Dan came out. Dan Sanshaw from EVR, he came out to the show. And then after the show, he just invited us out for dinner, and we sealed the deal. We started going steady.
That's awesome. Was that the only label that you had coming your way at the time, or did you have other labels courting you, or was it just EVR hit you up?
Yeah, we did have other smaller labels, nothing that we ever took. Nothing that we actually like truly thought that we were going to go with, but when we heard EVR was interested, it was like there was no question that we would, you know, be down with that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic label, and Dan is good people. He's always been there for us in any endeavor we've done, and even though we didn't go with EVR, which was the biggest mistake of our life, it was, you know, here's more money. And we took it instead of saying, here's a family. We went the complete opposite direction. And Dan was still at every show and everywhere. You know, if we needed advice, we could call him up. Even to this day, how I got connected with Natalie was through Dan after I hadn't probably talked to him like 8 years, maybe longer. And he's like, whoa, dude, how you doing? You know, you guys made a good choice there.
Who did you guys end up going with?
We went with Fearless.
Okay.
We were on Rise Records first. Fearless bought our release off of Rise before it came out. And then, because Rise was still tiny at the time, I remember arguing over $1,000 to master our record, which they didn't want to master it because it cost too much money. And now Rise Records is, you know,
it is
where it is. But
I've always thought that, like, being on a record label, I went into this actually thinking that, like, that there would be a bit of butting of heads. And, I went into it thinking that whole thing of, like, artists versus, you know, business. And but it's just been so weird with how easygoing they are and how okay and trusting they are with the things that we do, so much to the point. Okay, so I don't know if I should be saying this, but like yesterday, literally happened yesterday, where like we're thinking about what song to do our next music video for, and I had a particular track in mind that wouldn't really make for a good single, but would really go with the concept of the video really well. Mm-hmm. And so they said, you know, we prefer if you did this song because it'd make a great single, and they're right. And and like I kind of like got into that mode where I'm like, no, but this, you know, it's for the art, blah 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 blah. and then I ended up saying like, okay, fine, we'll go with the single. And then they ended up saying, you know what, if you feel that strongly about it, we'll go with the song that you want. And then here I am realizing that they're right, that like, no, like it's better to put out the song that would make the next single. So I ended up, like, almost like in a reverse psychology, being like, no, you know what, like, you're right, and yeah, like, that's why we have you. I mean, like, that's why I trust them, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Saying that right there, that's why you trust them. That's something that I know they don't take lightly, and it's something you're really hard to find in this industry where, you know, money doesn't trump everything, and you know, because they know. You know, they want to keep you happy, of course, but you're also helping them out as well. In this climate where, you know, people don't buy records anymore, it's really a struggle for labels. I mean, having that relationship and those foundations is really what's going to help them stay relevant and stay around, you know, something they've been doing before when people were buying records. They were exactly the same way. And like you said, they knew you knew what you wanted to do, but they, you know, they had to put their say in there.
And even while I was arguing my point, I was like saying, like, I get why they want this because it makes all the sense in the world. And then I'm like, wait, it makes all the sense in the world. Why am I not listening to them? And so they ended up giving me the freedom to go with my original choice. But it's but when you're right, you're right. And plus it's their money. I mean,
yeah,
you know, if I wanted to go make this dumb like art project on my own, like they would absolutely probably let me, and But I'm asking them to, you know, invest, and the smarter investment would be their choice, you know. So, yeah,
absolutely. And so with the newest record, Dear Me, you produced that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How did that come about? I want to hear a little bit about how you know, going from the initial vision of the songs to recording them and being, I mean, you're all in with this, so. How did that recording process go for you guys? And kind of walk me through that if you can.
Yeah. So, you know the band called Gates?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Kevin Dye, who's the singer of Gates, I got him on board to engineer. And so we rented out this beautiful space called, Audio Pilot in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And we had I think we booked out like a month to make this record. And so we mapped out, you know, how long each section would take and blah, 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 blah. And it was, we knew it'd be, a hustle. Like we had to really cram everything in and, but somehow we made it happen. And during the process, I realized that Kevin was doing more than just engineer work. You know, he was making really cool suggestions, when it came to, mic placement. And I know that that sounds like engineer work, but it was so much on the creative end, and I felt like it would affect the sound so much that it's like, okay, you're no longer just an engineer. I mean, you're clearly like co-producing this with me. So, he ended up being a co-producer on it, and somehow we made it happen. It would just be me and him like in the studio 24/7, and then. Because I freelance, so I sort of have the freedom to do that, to just take a month off and just dive into this, where the other members, they do have more normal jobs, so they would come in to do their parts, and then it was like this like rotating cast throughout the month, and yeah.
Okay. And so you said you freelance. What do you do on the for your day job?
I make music for commercials.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me about that. That's pretty awesome. What kind of stuff do you do? Like anything? Like insurance to Doritos? Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Pretty much. It's sorry, my brain's not working right. I woke up about 15-20 minutes ago, but I'll do anything pretty much that excites me. I'll get an email that says, "Here's the job. Are you in or are you out?" And there's a great freedom in that with being like, you know, I have this and this and this coming up, I'm out, or absolutely I'm in. And so far I've done stuff like JCPenney to like KFC to Ford. Yeah.
Really?
It's been fun, yeah.
That's awesome. seems like the coolest job in the world for a musician. I mean...
Yeah, I get to like flex certain musical muscles that maybe I wouldn't even get to flex with my own music. And I'm not gonna lie, making pop music or shitty like bro music, like rock music, like it's fun to make. It really is. I just I wouldn't slap my name on it.
Yeah.
So I get to do that. I get to have fun and do that stuff and sort of remain anonymous, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I really like that. And, I've made some, had an opportunity to make some EDM tracks, which I never thought I would.
Oh really? Okay.
But, yeah. And that's a lot tougher than people realize as well. Just the sound design aspect of that. You know? Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think people are confused there on when they see a DJ turning knobs. I mean, it's, or pressing play on their laptop, as they say, but,
Well, I mean, so yeah, with that, like all the hard work is done by the time they're on a stage, and they're at that point they are just pressing knobs, and it is as dumb as people probably think it is, but they don't realize that a lot of hard work went into it in the studio, you know, to get those sounds, at least the good ones. You know, there are people that just take like preset sounds, or they just buy sample bundles and just sort of throw that all over the place, but. But yeah, someone has to like come up with these crazy sounds, and it's sort of not my strong suit, but doing tracks like that, it makes me you know, work those muscles with, like, just, like, sitting on a synth and just, like, you know, just trying to get something out of it, you know, by turning oscillators and crap like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it also helps kind of bleed the demons out as far as little ideas that come in. I mean, it's fantastic. You can make money to do things that you're not necessarily, you know, would ever put out there with your name on, yeah, it, which is awesome.
There's definitely little things that, like, I come up with that, like, I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then I'm like, no, this is, like, too cheesy. Like, even I have to draw the line. So I could put that cheesy whatever into a commercial and still feel like I got to, like, you know, use it in some way.
It's like the if YouTube commenters could actually push a monetize button on their comments and the anonymous the anonymous people there, they're like, yeah, no, this is, yeah, that's awesome. And so you, how long have you been doing that?
I feel like I've been doing this for about four years, something like that.
Shit, man, you could do that on the road even.
Yeah, you know, I tried, and it's a lot tougher than I thought, because on the road you're in a van, and for the most part you're in a van, and you need, like, internet connection, and plus just, like, staring at a screen while you're in the van is, like, nauseating.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So it's tough.
So plus,
I like the experience of, like, being on the road and hanging out with my friends, and I sort of have to, like, disconnect myself from everyone when I do that. So
yeah. Sure. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's time you'll never get back to, and that's some of the best days of your life. Like, do you guys sleep in the van, sleep at people's houses? Do you guys do hotels?
Well, most nights we'll do hotels, but when we can find a place, we'll, you know,
yeah,
we'll definitely use it. For sure. God, I totally sound like a guy that, like, has not toured much, huh? When I'm like, yeah, I just want to hang out with my friends.
No, that's exactly what touring is. Like, that's the
But I'm not at a point yet where I'm like, God, like, I just need to get away from these people.
No, because it's that's one of the things I feel lucky about too, is having so many bands that just made it seem like a family atmosphere. Like, we were at the point where we were on, like, $3 a day budget in the beginning, you know, where we'd come up with creative ways to make full meals out of $3 at McDonald's, to, you know, going out with some bands that were like, hey, let's just go to the dollar store, buy a bunch of stuff, and yeah, we'll put it together. Hey, you got mac and cheese, you got chili, let's mix it together. You know, staying at people's houses. It's just an adventure, and it's a career that you technically don't need to ever grow up. And that's awesome, and also detrimental, I think, to a point where a lot of times on tour, I found that I would feel like I was just kind of spinning my wheels. Like, I was having a blast, but I'd come home and people are like, what did you do, you know, the last couple months? I just graduated college, or I just had a baby. I was like, oh, I just played, you know, a bunch of shows. And yeah, people always envied what I was doing, and I always envied what they were doing.
Yeah.
Do you get that same feeling?
For sure. And yeah, it's almost like, God, I would hate to, I'm going to get criticized for making this comparison, but it's almost like some, like, very, 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 very small version of, like, PTSD, where you're, like, coming back and everything seems like it doesn't mean as much to you as you'd like. And yeah, I'm just sort of waiting for the next time I go back on the road, and everything in between is just, like, this, like, waiting period. And I just heard Bruce Springsteen on Mark Maron's podcast. Uh-huh. And he sort of was talking about a similar thing, and he's dealt with it a lot more than I have, and probably more than I ever will. But where, you know, he's coming back as this, like, version of himself that's, like, slightly different than the version that left, and the world around him. It was he had a really tough time sort of dealing with people and dealing with himself when he got back from the road, mm-hmm, and just, like, everyday life and the mundaneness of it. But yeah, you know, that's true that, like, you don't have to grow up when you're on the road, and it kind of, like, stunts you. And then so when you get back into the real world, you know, you're sort of handicapped.
Yeah, I view it as, like, there's that whole thing where, you know, you go to prison for a long time, you're institutionalized, you're not able to function in society. I think the fact of what you guys are doing, and, you know, everyone else who's touring, that what you said with the boss talking about,
how he, you know, had trouble coming back into society. You get such a clear picture of other things on the road that you don't see anywhere else, because you see, I mean, you watch the news, this happened in North Dakota. Well, I was just in North Dakota and it's exactly the opposite of that. You know, you get this perspective that is priceless, but at the same time, when you come home, I see it as actually having your eyes open that you were actually institutionalized at home, that you're actually noticing it when you come back and saying, wow, I was in a rat race. You know, I wasn't in prison, but my life is a lot more structured here than it needs to be. And I think that, that having those blinders pulled off is important from time to time. And I think it's a really priceless thing that I wish everyone got to experience. You know, graduate high school, you know, here's $1,000. Go take this car and just go find yourself for a month. You know,
right.
I think it's important. And I don't think enough people experience that travel and meeting people and getting a expanded worldview. Everyone's so just locked in their day to day
that, especially here at like suburban Jersey. I definitely feel that, where, you know, people have never left their hometowns, let alone, you know, their states, let alone their countries. And, if you and I ever run a country, we'll do like a mandatory post-high school travel the world.
Seriously, like a government-funded month-long walkabout. Like, I think it would change the world. And I, you know, the amount of stories you gather, the communication skills, and when you leave for Europe with $20 in your pocket for a month and a half, you really find out what you're made of and that you're able to, you know, get through things, you know, in a way that you can't teach.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about traveling is, like, you know, obviously there's the places that you see and the beautiful views and blah, blah, blah. But one of my favorite things about traveling is just the people that you meet and just, you know, going to Thailand and like seeing their view on life and how they prioritize things. There's little things that, like, I feel like, again, like adding to the arsenal where I'm like, wow, this is like, I really like this about your humanity, and let me add that to my arsenal and try my best to bring it back home with me and try my best to hold on to it. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to not have those things fade as your life goes on. But, you know, the different people and in different places, it's like, there's just so much to add on to your own personality and humanity from that.
Exactly. It's like a battle jacket. Like, you just throw it in there and you think about how hard it was back in the day for these explorers that went out and come back and say, guys, this is how it is. Try to convince people of that, you know, where people still think the earth's flat today. Like, right. It's crazy. But,
do you hear that dog barking in the background?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
That's no problem at all.
Backyard. Should I let him in or?
Oh, it's up to you, man. It's not terribly distracting at all. I you know, it's happened before a lot of times, like, especially when you're at home, that stuff happens, but,
I think she stopped. I think we're cool.
Yeah, that'll be the second, maybe the third dog we've had on the podcast. But the very first episode with Andrew from Fall of Troy had his dog sitting on my lap. We were in his house
so just want to be heard.
So you're doing the commercial thing, you're doing the old thing. You guys just got back from a tour. Was there any big things you learned on this last tour about the band or yourself that really resonated with you on this last run?
Yeah, there's definitely, things, yeah. I mean, well, you know, we're all different people at the end of the day with our different personalities and, just learning how to deal, you know, I'm so close to these people that sometimes I like don't respect the boundaries, the way I should. For example, if I think something's wrong, I have a habit of like being like, no, what's wrong? Like, let's talk about it, blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. And sometimes that's not everyone's way of dealing with something. And sometimes all you need to do is just let it alone for like, you know, 15 minutes, just chill. And just learning how everyone likes to sort of deal with conflict, you know, just so I have a way of sort of like imposing my way of dealing with conflict on others. And you know, definitely this tour, I learned a little bit of that, where just like, yeah, just how to deal with everyone individually as different people in their own way, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's a valuable lesson. I mean, everyone handles things differently, like you said. And when you're trapped in a box like that, and someone just wants to be left alone, it's you know, you learn pretty quick.
Yeah, for sure.
But and another thing I want to touch on here, we have a few minutes left, so I wanted to talk about the covers you do on YouTube. I watched a bunch of those as I was, you know, prepping for this interview, because I would just kind of, you know, look around. That's why I brought up, is there an instrument you don't play? Because you play so many different things. And kind of what your main influence has been the last few years as far as music goes. Because you have a wide variety of covers you're doing from some pretty amazing bands. And I'm wondering what really inspires you, you know, in the last year or two.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I feel like I've become that old man that listens to what they've listened to for the last 10 years. And I've sort of like, I feel a bit of like, I feel like my musical intake has been stunted a little bit, and I really need to do something about that. But, yeah, I haven't really gotten into, any bands in particular in the last year or so. Nothing really new, just, you know, like there's the obvious influences of like Sigur Rós and Radiohead and that. And, you know, I've said this before, but I always sort of look to, like old, like Nat King Cole songs or Etta James songs for string arrangement, like the way their strings will interact with the main melody. And it's almost like a secondary vocal, the way they like duet with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love those, you know, tracks, and just also just the songs and sound of them. It's funny. I'm completely part of the problem with when it comes to listeners these days. Like my attention span is so short. Everything's so available, and I could so easily find an amazing band, because there are so many amazing bands out there. It's definitely not a case of, you know, there not being enough good music. It's just I've just been spoiled, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I haven't gone down the Spotify rabbit hole where you do related artists for an hour and a half and just keep going.
My problem is I'll find a song on Spotify and it will move me and it will be amazing. And for some reason, my next step is not to go see everything else that this artist has done, which is what I should do, mm-hmm. and which is what I used to do. I remember buying CDs and, like, you know, without ever knowing what it would sound like. And sometimes you'd buy a shit CD. And so, like, I remember, like, making myself enjoy this shit CD to some extent because I paid money for it. So, I mean, there's a case where, like, I don't even like what I'm hearing, but I'm investing into it. Let alone, you know, now, which is like I hear something great and I don't even take the time out to dive deeper. But yeah, that needs to change. I definitely need to, you know, find out about some of these amazing artists that I'm hearing.
Yeah, and that's something that's something you can definitely jump into, and plenty of time on the road to check out new music and stuff like that, as far as those long drives and everything else. And
yeah. Well, it's funny. We do a lot of podcasts on the road.
Awesome. I wish I had podcasts when I was touring.
Yeah, no, it helps so much, because sometimes the last thing you want to do after night after night of playing music is to listen to more music. So yeah. We've actually listened to your podcast on the road.
Oh, nice. Okay.
A lot of like Radiolab and, you know, all those good ones.
Yes, those ones, they kind of have the monopoly on things. They're just so good. I mean, the podcasting's blowing up, and it's really fun to be a part of it. And I do the same thing on my commute to work and things like that. I put on other podcasts, or when I'm doing, you know, dishes or whatever, I have it on a speaker going in the kitchen. Or it's just kind of a cool way to kind of, it's almost like you're sitting down with the two of us listening to a conversation, you know, in a coffee shop or something. Like you're kind of eavesdropping on someone you want to hear speak.
Oh, shit. You know? Am I on the podcast right now? I thought this is the intro.
Yes, you are.
All right. Well, okay.
We're actually right at the end because I want to ask you one more thing, Jay, is what's coming up for Ole in 2017?
I don't know. I'm sure there's a plan in place. I'm just not the guy to ask. I'm so short-sighted when it comes to these things. I can tell you what we're going to do in the next couple months.
Sure.
But yeah, which is, I think I mentioned it before, but just to, I think we're going to work on another music video. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to try to get on a tour or do our own tour in late March.
Okay.
But yeah, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, I suppose. Yeah.
Awesome, Jay. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time with me today and coming on and chatting. And
Thank you.
Know, I really enjoy these interviews with people I don't know because I always find out so many things and enjoy it. I wouldn't say more, but about the I don't want to say more than friends of mine that I have on, but it's really nice to meet someone new and just kind of cut it up for a while. So
yeah, I really enjoyed your questions. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. I mean, I love talking about music and I feel like that this conversation was very much just about music, and so I really like that.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate that, Jay, and good luck to you in 2017, and hopefully I'll be able to come see you guys when you make it out to Portland.
Awesome. Yes, let's hang out.
Right on, man. Well, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
All right, guys, that was my conversation with Jay Sakong from the band Ole. Once again, we are on purepleasurepodcast.com. We are on Twitter and Instagram. Check us out on Adobe Radio Saturday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, every week for a new guest. We are really stoked to have you guys every week after week. Thank you so much for all the support, and we'll see you next week. Thanks again.